Welcome to the weekly broadcast of Let's Talk About It, produced by the Public Affairs Department of KXO AM 1230 and FM 107.5 radio. Let's Talk About It is directed by Mario Espinoza with the technical assistance of Carol Buckley. This program brings weekly community mental health issues to your radio. Let's Talk About It is produced for and presented as a public service by Imperial County Behavioral Health Service, Leticia Plancarte Garcia, Director. And now let's join our co-hosts, Patricia Arevalo-Caro and Alfonso Ruiz, for today's program.
Welcome, everyone, to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. This is your weekly wellness radio for both Mexicali and Imperial County. I'm your host, Maria Wyatt, and my co-host is Scott Dudley.
Hey.
Mr. Scott Dudley.
That's my pronoun. Welcome, and thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in this week and every week. We've been doing this for over a decade for our community, bringing mental health, behavioral health, wellness information on a weekly basis.
Yes.
To your front door of your radio. So, welcome aboard. We are very fortunate to be joined by Jennifer Cohen Harper. She is the founder and director of Little Flower Yoga. Now, we've had some yoga shows on before, but this one's got a twist. This one's special. And the idea of why it's special, I think, is going to really excite the community, because I think some real long-term ramifications of what Jennifer's got going here, and as it becomes more and more evidence-based, dare I say, I think this is something that's going to be really, really common going forward. So, Jennifer, you're on the edge of an empire. You're like Ray Kroc was when he bought out the bought out the McDonald's guys and started putting them every three blocks in the city. One suspects a little healthier, but still, I think you're on the edge of something pretty big.
Well, thank you. I'm very glad to be with you today, and it certainly feels like the ball is rolling and rolling at an accelerating pace. I've been doing this work now of yoga and mindfulness with children for 12 years, and it's never felt like this before. As you said, as we develop the evidence base, things are changing quite a bit. As the culture changes, things are picking up steam. And as we have more people out in the world who've seen the very powerful benefits, both for themselves and for the children they work with, they become spokespeople and advocates. And that's really contributing tremendously to how this work is spreading.
You know, there's been a lot of work and a lot of exposure now on mindfulness. And mm-hmm. I think it's when it became, I was probably at Walmart, standing in line, you know, the magazine racks, and then right there in Time Magazine had mindfulness right on front of it. And I go, wow, you know what? And you hear more about it. Okay, so what is mindfulness? And we had several shows on mindfulness, but it was always targeting the adults, you know, mm-hmm. working with adults and never with children.
Yeah.
So in your organization, you're specifically working with children, correct?
We are, yes.
So yes. That's something.
And we adapt.
Yeah. And children is a whole different, working with children is a whole different thing. It's not the same as working with adults.
It's very different. And it's different enough that we've had to really dig in and explore how we translate these practices, not just to meet the children's needs and the challenges that they're facing, but also to make the practices more engaging and more fun and make them into practices that the kids want to bring into their life and will remember. You know, we don't want to be teaching these practices to them like the way they learn so many things where they cram for it, they can take a test on it, but then a few weeks later it's gone. You know, we're teaching life skills, and the only way to teach life skills to kids is to make it accessible and engaging. So we've had to do a lot of work on those things.
So you had to come up with almost a different version, I would suspect, for children, because, well, for starters, their frontal cortex isn't as developed, so they got less attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how do you do mindfulness with somebody whose attention is already
let's start from the beginning for our listeners. What is mindfulness?
Yeah.
And how you're working with children.
So it's such an important thing to say what is mindfulness, because as the word has become more and more common, and as you say, showing up on the front of Time magazine, I think that people often think they know what mindfulness is. And then when we start practicing and looking at different types of interventions, it gets very important to be specific and to make sure that we're clear. So there's a couple of things I'd love to address. One is, what is the definition of mindfulness that we use with our kids? And then how are we looking at reaching that? How are we looking at building their capacity for mindfulness? So probably a lot of your listeners and a lot of the public in general that are familiar with mindfulness are familiar with Jon Kabat-Zinn's definition of mindfulness, which is probably the most frequently used, especially in clinical setting, which is some version of present moment non-judgmental awareness, which is a great definition. But if you think about talking to like 8-year-olds about present moment non-judgmental awareness, right?
What?
There's a lot to unpack there. There's a lot to unpack. You got to like define three words before you put them together, and it just doesn't work. So what we found is really helpful and really does resonate with our kids is a definition developed by a colleague of mine named Amy Saltzman, and she defines mindfulness as paying attention to your life here and now with kindness and curiosity. So paying attention here and now with kindness and curiosity. And this is something that you can really work with children. So I always introduce this to kids in a way that allows them to explore it, right? And we break it down. So there are several parts to this. There's the paying attention. Okay, what are we paying attention to here and now? Right, so there's two dimensions there. So the present moment contains paying attention to what's happening where you are, not what's happening somewhere else or what you think is happening back at your house or in your friend's class, but being here, and then paying attention to what's happening now. So reducing rumination on the past and worrying about the future. Right, so bringing our awareness to here and now, and kids can really get that. And then where we often sort of leave off, where a lot of people kind of stop, is the present moment awareness. But mindfulness is not truly mindfulness unless it also addresses the energy or intention that you're bringing to that present moment awareness. So we pay attention to the here and now, but how do we pay attention to it? Is it just equally valid to be sort of paying attention in this angry, pissed off way, or, what are we bringing to the present moment? So what we talk to the kids about is working towards bringing kindness and curiosity to the present moment. So that means kindness and curiosity towards yourself and your own experience, as well as kindness and curiosity towards other people and their experiences. And that's what we're looking to cultivate. And the kids understand it. It's language that works for them, and it's something that we can always be doing. And we're going to talk about some specific ways that we practice mindfulness with children. But really, when you think about that definition, paying attention to the here and now with kindness and curiosity, you can do that when you're brushing your teeth. You can do that when you're walking down the street. You can do that in conversation with a friend. So mindfulness is this interesting practice where it's circular in a sense, where we have a set of practices that we undertake to work towards mindfulness, right? So mindfulness is a practice and a pathway, but it's also the goal. So we have mindfulness-based practices that we do very intentionally, right, that are structured, and then we also want to use those mindfulness, those structured mindfulness practices, to learn how to live day-to-day life more mindfully. So, it keeps growing in almost an upward spiral. We practice, and then day-to-day life, we have the capacity to be more mindful. And then that capacity informs the quality of our practice. And we just keep keep rising together.
Now, mindfulness, does this work with children We know right here at Behavioral Health, we work with a lot of children who have ADHD, impulsivity, they have anger issues, they have a lot of emotional behavioral problems. Or is this mindfulness only for kids don't have any of the above issues that I mentioned? Because we work with a lot of kids that have, like I mentioned, ADHD and impulsivity.
Yeah, absolutely. So mindfulness is for all children. Right? And I would say that it's particularly beneficial for those kids who do struggle with attention disorders, who do have anxiety, who may have depression, who have behavior disorders, or just challenges with behavior and challenges meeting the expectations in front of them. And I can understand why a lot of people might think, okay, mindfulness, that's for the kids who know how to sit still and pay attention. Right? Mm-hmm. But that's a sort of a misunderstanding of mindfulness. So we often think of mindfulness as something that we have to do sitting down and being quiet, right? Still the body, still the mind. That's the image of mindfulness, but it's often not the reality. So when we talk about sharing mindfulness with children, for us and in our programming, we are always talking about yoga and mindfulness, and we're always talking about working with the body. And I think that this is extremely relevant even for adults, but when you're talking about children, children are living in their body, and a lot of the challenges that children face stem from or are increased by being disembodied, not being able to listen to the messages of their body, not having any mechanisms of control over their body. We could kind of talk on and on about the impacts of disembodiment. These practices are in many ways practices of re-embodying. And so when we're talking about mindfulness for children, we're talking about paying attention to the here and now with kindness and curiosity. We're not talking about sitting still and being quiet. So, that is a bit of a misconception. And in many ways, these children who are struggling with behavior challenges, with attention challenges, their problems and their challenges are stemming from the body. And so we use the body to reach them, and we use the body to reach the mind, and the mind to reach the body. I often say to both the kids and the adults that I work with that children have tremendous inner resources, and some of those inner resources are their body, their breath, and their mindset. Right? They have powerful resources, and they're very, very rarely taught how to use those resources. The body, the breath, and their mindset. And if we address any of those, typically we're addressing the mind, we're addressing their mindset. But the body and the breath are equally powerful tools and sometimes more powerful, particularly since our children are, start out so embodied. So we use these practices, the yoga and the mindfulness, to increase their awareness of their inner resources, help them figure out how to harness their inner resources and use them in challenging situations.
Now, with these, mindfulness and yoga activities that you're doing, probably several parents are listening and teachers working with, people working with kids. They can use, do they have to be yoga trained? Trainers to do these activities, because I can see it how beneficial it could be, with just like, for example, I'm a mom, and it would be awesome if I could just do these activities with my child to kind of like, center her in and
absolutely. It's one of the things that I love is when parents get inspired and realize that they don't need to be a yoga teacher in order to share these practices.
Yeah.
Now, what we're talking about is bringing kindness and curiosity to movement. So, just as an example, you can tell a kid or tell yourself, you can try it right now, lift your arms up over your head. Okay, bring them down. Right? And that's not doing anything particularly impressive. Right?
Yeah.
It's not doing anything particularly useful. But if you slow that down and ask a child to lift their arms over their head slowly, slowly, slowly,
okay,
and notice whether their arms feel heavy or light. And then say, take a few breaths while their arms are lifted. And notice if the sensation in their arms changes over time. And then ask them to imagine their arms are very heavy, and as they bring them down, try to resist that heaviness. Try to bring them down as slowly as possible. And then you can ask them a question after they do that, like, notice if anything in your body feels different after doing that, lifting your arms and bringing them down. Like, that's curiosity about your experience. It's paying attention to what's happening and bringing curiosity to your experience. But you don't have to know anything about yoga or even ever taken a yoga class in order to do that. Right? So the yoga practice does provide us with a really wonderful sort of assortment of practices, physical practices, breath-based practices, relaxation practices. It's this nice sort of ready-made package of practices that we can use and then layer our mindfulness practice over them. But if you don't know any of those things and you've never been to a yoga class and you're not a yoga teacher, it doesn't matter. There's nothing that should stop you from bringing curiosity and awareness to your kid's day-to-day life, right? Or even practicing just simple movement, jumping jacks. Okay, stand in mountain pose, right? This just means stand up tall, right? Don't lock your knees, relax your shoulders. So stand in mountain pose. Notice how your body's feeling. Do 10 jumping jacks. Okay, come into mountain pose again. How does your body feel different? Like, these are very, very simple things, but they start the process of re-embodying, of connecting our kids with a better understanding of how their body affects their mind, how their breath affects their body, all these sort of interrelations between the body, the breath, and the mind. We can't harness them and use them to help us if we don't understand them, if we don't know how our body and our mind and our breath work together. So when I think about these practices for children, it's really just seeding, at the beginning, it's just seeding this greater connection between what I'm doing and what it means for me, what effect it has on me. And anybody can do that. And we have a lot of resources for parents specifically. You know, I can share them at the end of the program if you want, or anybody can look on the Little Flower Yoga website. And all of our books, our yoga deck cards, our workbooks are all equally as useful for parents as they would be for clinicians or educators. You don't have to have any yoga experience to use them. And in fact, most of the people who come to our in-person workshops are actually not yoga teachers. They're primarily clinicians or classroom teachers.
Mm. Nice. You know, as a parent also, you know, that is an investment. It's sounds relatively inexpensive and easy, but mm-hmm. but it is time and it is effort, mm-hmm. and I'd have to put down my smartphone, mm-hmm. and stop watching TV and ditch the Fritos or whatever. What's in it for me? What kind of benefits do you see in terms of starting this and committing to it? Is it something where, you know, 17 years later my kid's gonna go, I've got this, or do you see stuff right away? Is are there things that parents report that make it worth our while?
Absolutely. And I think we can talk about this in several layers, from a parenting perspective, from a clinician perspective, and from a child perspective. And when I think about families and parents doing this work with their kids, some of the things that you just mentioned about, okay, it takes time, I have to put down my phone, I have to really engage with my kid, all of those things have an immediate payoff regardless of what you're doing. Like, so I hope that you're, you know, using that time well to cultivate relationship with your child. You know, as a parent, if you can set aside, you know, 5 minutes in the morning and 5 minutes in the evening to practice yoga and mindfulness with your child, you're giving yourself 10 minutes of present moment awareness with your child, which is precious and changes relationships and changes the dynamic in families, irrespective of what you're doing during that time. So I'll talk about what we're doing during that time in just a second, but I can't emphasize this point enough, which is that in order to share these practices with children, as parents, we have to at least invest in a preliminary way in offering these practices to ourselves. because we cannot say, be mindful to our child. We can't say, approach the present moment with kindness and curiosity if while we're sending that message and going through those activities, we ourselves are distracted.
Yeah.
Right? So if we're committed to sharing this work with our children, we have to start practicing ourselves. And that doesn't mean you have to go to a yoga class every day, right? But it does mean you have to pay attention to the quality of your attention. And in those times that you're dedicated to working with your child, you need to be able to notice if your mind is wandering, catch it, and bring it back. Right? And just the act of doing that, regardless of what kind of activity or conversation you're having, sends your child a very powerful message that they are worthy of your attention, right? That you find them worthy and compelling and interesting enough to practice not being distracted from them. And one of the immediate payoffs of that is a better relationship with your child. And we know so much about how many of the challenges our children face stem from insecure attachment, stem from feeling alone, stem from, you know, all of these things that have to do with relationship and family dynamic, that when we as the parents can bring more mindfulness to our interactions with our kids, we're automatically helping them. We're automatically giving them some degree of protection, right? A bit of a protective factor there.
So that means...
Oh, go ahead.
No, so that means, parents, put your cell phones away.
Yeah.
You're trying to do some mindfulness.
Yeah, turn it off, you know, and it's like, don't put it on vibrate. Like,
that's true.
Literally turn it off and put it in the other room, because even having it nearby is a distraction.
Yes,
right.
That's
even
true.
If you don't answer it when that text comes in or whatever it is and you glance away, you're breaking the connection with your child. And believe
true.
Me, I have a 5-year-old and a 3-month-old and a husband and a business and extended family who are constantly calling me. And, you know, I know what I'm asking, and I have to remind myself to practice it. But when we have that device right by our side all the time, we are sending a message to our kids, like, even though I'm paying attention to you right now, there's a chance that something more important than you is going to pop up at any moment.
Wow.
Right? We're leaving ourselves on call for things that are more important than our kids. And I know that sounds kind of dramatic, but I think that truly is the felt sense.
The implicit message,
isn't
it?
Even if our kids can't.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just always there. So I would say, you know, even if you're not going to do any of the yoga and mindfulness with your kids, okay, like, so even if you stop listening right now, you never, like, look into this, you never do, if you just, like, turned your phone off for, like, 10, 15 minutes a few times a day and put it in a different room and said, I'm going to engage with my kid fully with no possibility of interruption, other than, like, maybe human interruption, no technology interruption, that would go a long way. That's a way of practicing mindfulness with your kids, right? Is to commit to that. Notice when your mind starts to wander and say, no, I'm not going to, like, pretend I have to go to the bathroom so that I can go do the quick check of incoming text messages. No, I'm just going to stay here. I'm just going to stay here in the here and now with kindness and curiosity.
Fantastic.
That would go a long way.
Fantastic. We are joined by Jennifer Cohen Harper. She is the founder and director of Little Flowers Yoga, and we're really talking about how to look through yoga and mindfulness practices into the world of the child and what kind of cool stuff that brings. We're going to take a short break. This is Let's Talk About It. We're sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. We'll be right back.
Let's Talk About It, bringing community mental health issues to your radio. Listen each Sunday morning to KXO AM 1230 at 7 a.m. and now on Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Or log on to KXORadio.com for a 5-minute podcast highlight of the show or the show in its entirety. This program is produced by the Public Affairs Department of KXO AM 1230 and FM 107.5. Let's Talk About It is presented as a public service of Imperial County Behavioral Health Services.
Welcome back, everyone. You're still listening to your weekly wellness radio. Let's Talk About It. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. If you missed the first part of the show, don't worry. You can hear the full entire show at our podcast at kxoradio.com.
And we'd be remiss if we didn't mention our email address that you can call us up or talk to us with.
Make our phones buzz. Speaking of phones. I call it snail mail.
Wellness Radio at co.imperial.ca.us is our email. Feel free to contact us with anything. We've got Jennifer's email, so if you get something for her, I could give it to her and she could give it back to us. And anyway, we've done that several times over the years to get questions answered. So if you've got a question, feel free to ask. Again, wellnessradio at co.imperial.ca.us. Welcome back. This is Let's Talk About It, sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. Our guest today is the founder and director of Little Flowers Yoga. Her name is Jennifer Cohen Harper, and she's joining us today on the heels of a baby. So thank you and welcome aboard, Jennifer, and welcome back to the swing of adult life.
Thank you very much. Glad to be back.
Nice. Now, we were talking in the first segment. We really explored mindfulness and yoga working from the perspective of parents working with children. You've also done quite a bit of work on getting it. I mean, because classrooms, for example, if you can get 30 kids and get them all at once and get the benefits of this practice to a group of 30 kids in one place, well, you know, it's kind of a good wholesale way to deal with the world. Tell us what you've done with schools and with clinical practices, because I know you've done a lot of work there.
Sure. We've really done a tremendous amount of work in schools in several different ways. And you're right, the magnitude of how we can reach kids just grows and grows. So our school programming, it falls under the name of the School Yoga Project, is primarily based in New York. This is our home base, is the New York City School District, which has 1 million kids in it. So we're still working on reaching all of them. But what we do is several things. We do offer mat-based yoga classes, anywhere from 30 minutes to 60 minutes for full classrooms of kids. And then we also do something called classroom cushions, where we'll take 15 or 20 minutes and go to a classroom, sometimes really as short as 10 minutes it ends up being, go into a classroom and do chair yoga with kids. And so these are two different ways of working. When we do chair yoga programs, what we found is that we can reach many, many more kids more quickly. So it's logistically easier. It's easier for schools to accommodate for schedule purposes.
Yeah.
And it's really becoming something that our schools are asking for from us more and more and more. So whereas, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, we were doing almost exclusively mat-based classes. We'd need a big space, set up a circle of mats. The kids have to come and take their shoes off. It takes all this time. We still do that when we have the time and the space. But where the field is moving more and more is to shorter, more frequent dosages, I guess you could say. And this has really transformed the work that we're doing in a very positive way, because when we come into a classroom for 10 or 15 minutes and do chair-based practices, and the classroom teacher is right there participating with us, what's happening is that the effects are being magnified even more, because not only are we working with 30 kids at a time, what we're also doing is reaching every single one of those teachers in those classrooms. And because the practice is short and it's not intimidating, what we found when we started doing more chair yoga programming is that the classroom teachers were starting to learn the practices and use them on their own, even without formal professional development, which we do quite a bit of. So I also do professional development in schools all across the country. We do live and web-based professional development, sharing yoga and mindfulness tools with children. And we also do a lot of continuing education for clinicians, for healthcare providers, classroom teachers, social workers, occupational therapists. It's a very interdisciplinary world we work in because we see our role as supporting essentially everyone who works with children and teens, because there's no work we do with our kids that couldn't benefit from the addition of some embodied mindfulness practices. No matter what we're asking our kids to engage in, they can engage better when they have tools of self-awareness, when they have the capacity to notice themselves being distracted and come back, when they're better able to recognize their body's needs and ideally meet them, but at least not be overwhelmed by them, right? All of what we ask of our kids, whether it's academic, whether it's health-related, whether it's in a therapeutic setting, whatever we're asking them to engage in would be better served if they have the skills that yoga and mindfulness offers. So we work with, essentially, as I said, everyone who works with children. And in the school context, doing shorter programming, chair-based programming, very non-threatening, has had just a truly remarkable exponential effect on how many children are able to be served.
Nice. Well, yeah, because there's so much competition for every minute of the day in school, academic, mm-hmm. with the curriculums, with the core subjects. You find yourself that schools are asking for this chair-based yoga. What kind of benefits do they see specifically in terms of their kids who are practicing?
Mm-hmm. The immediate benefit, I would say, and there are quite a few, is kids who are happier and more capable of regulating their bodies and their minds. It's a practice, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all kind of thing where we come in and say, okay, we're going to do this and it's going to help your kids calm down, or we're going to do this and it's going to help your kids get more energized. What we're doing is giving the kids a set of skills to recognize and meet their needs. So what an immediate benefit is the kids feel respected. The kids feel like their needs are appreciated and seen, and it increases the quality of their relationships throughout the entire school community. Our schools are also seeing a reduction in behavior problems. We know so many of the behavior problems that our kids mm-hmm. are experiencing come yeah. from unmet needs,
yes.
you know, unmet needs, whether they're physical needs or emotional needs. And when we start giving them when we start giving their needs respect and we start teaching them tools to meet their needs, then behaviors improve. And we're also seeing a real increase in our kids' capacity to notice when they're distracted and increase their attention capacity, not through this mechanism of trying to kind of put their mind in a vice grip and lock onto one thing, right? We know that doesn't work. But what we're helping them get better at is noticing when their mind has wandered, catching it and mm-hmm. bringing it back. So we're sort of strengthening that attention muscle, that ability to notice distraction and bring their awareness back. So all of those things are contributing to less behavior problems and better academic outcomes,
yeah.
which for an inexpensive intervention is pretty much amazing.
So that 10-15 minute investment actually ends up paying mm-hmm. off in better test scores and better school discipline.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I mean,
less discipline,
yeah.
less suspensions, you know, less need to ostracize kids from their community. And really what we see, part of what we see ourselves doing is actually helping cultivate a community. So in the first part of the show, I mentioned how all our kids have inner resources, their body, their breath, their mind. When we work in groups, when we work in schools, we also talk to the kids very explicitly about their community being a resource. So it's not an individualized intervention where we're just paying attention to ourselves, we're just being mindful of ourselves. We expand our awareness to include those around us and recognize how we're all co-creating the environment for each other. And we do really intentional work around cultivating a stronger community, and that also goes a long way towards reducing behavior problems.
Now, you know, this is like Scott was saying, you know, it's a 10-15 minute investment and inexpensive. It's pretty, I mean, even you said they're very easy activities. Now, from the education, right, especially here in California, have you had, is there any resistance because it is yoga? I know that mm-hmm. there was a school district here in, I think it was in Escondido here in California.
Yeah.
There was a lawsuit because yoga was being provided. You know, there was a lawsuit, parents brought a lawsuit because mm-hmm. of the religious not implication, but beliefs surrounding yoga. Absolutely. How difficult has it been to do yoga in schools, or can it be modified, or it's not yoga, but it is yoga, but, you know, kind of like that thin eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's always, you know, an interesting dynamic, because we are 100% committed to teaching a secular practice. And that is essential, both because, you know, of our constitution, and also because we're committed to inclusivity, and we're committed to offering a practice that is accessible to every child from every, regardless of their socioeconomic background, their religious background, ethnicity, ability, whatever it is. And part of being inclusive is being secular, right? That's how you make something as broadly accessible to as many people as possible. And that's what something that we're very committed to at Little Flower Yoga. Now, that being said, we are well aware of some of the challenges around people's perception of yoga, and also some of the ways that yoga can be ritualized to feel very religious, even in situations where something may not be religious or spiritual. Sometimes when it's ritualized, or you know, doing something like singing Om, for example, can feel very religious. And our commitment as an organization is to looking at every single thing we offer our kids and saying, is it essential to what we're trying to do? Is it essential to what we're offering them, what we're teaching them, what they're learning? And if it's not, then why are we doing it, right? And we have found that we can absolutely maintain a completely secular program and still be very, very effective. The lawsuit that you mentioned in Encinitas was certainly put a little bit of a shockwave through the yoga in school community, but we've been happy with the resolution of that lawsuit, as the yoga program there was found to be secular, and the program has continued to this day. So so the parent group that brought the lawsuit actually lost. That being said, I also think it's really important that we're always very, very respectful of the families and the communities that we're working in. So I think for anybody who's teaching a yoga in schools program or a mindfulness in schools program, it's really important to commit to 100% transparency. I'm always willing to have a parent come in and observe my class. I'm always happy to talk with a parent who has any concerns and to really listen, because there are concerns that a parent could have from a religious or cultural perspective that I just don't know about, you know, and I'm open to exploring what we're offering and how we're offering it, and continuously revising what we're doing to better serve every community that we work with. So I would certainly say we've had very little pushback. In 12 years of teaching yoga, I've only had two situations where a parent didn't want their child to participate. In one of those situations, the parent came and observed classes, chatted with me a bit. I gave her a little time and space, and the kid really wanted to participate. And they came around, right? They came around. And later on in the school year, that child was allowed to participate. In the other situation, it didn't really come to a head. The parent was more like, okay, you do your thing, whatever it is you're doing, but I just don't want my kid to participate, and that's it, and didn't really want to engage. And both situations had to be okay for me, because nothing, no matter how wonderful it is necessarily right for every single family, and that just has to be okay.
Let me play devil's advocate the reverse way.
You're the devil's advocate. Usually it's me.
It's usually you. Is there a challenge with is there a challenge with the gentrification of a mm-hmm. a fairly formal practice?
Make mindfulness.
Wow. There you go.
Yeah.
It's often referred to as make mindfulness.
Wow.
There is a challenge with the commodification of something that really is a very deep and intentional practice. And there certainly are some people who argue that mindfulness shouldn't be taught separate from Buddhism, for example, or that spirituality needs to be woven in order for it to be quote-unquote real yoga. And, you know, everybody is entitled to their opinion, and there are a lot of different ways of practicing. I think what concerns me is when we're not bringing thoughtfulness and intention to what we're offering. So I don't worry, from my perspective, we can still teach a very, very powerful, deeply meaningful practice that is 100% secular. And I've seen that happen thousands of times in many, many classes with many children, really bring meaningful, powerful work and change and transformation to individuals and communities through practices that are absolutely secular. I do think it can be problematic when the person teaching, and I don't mean parents working with their own kids, but I mean, say, somebody coming in and teaching yoga and mindfulness to an entire school district, for example, doesn't have their own well-developed, deeply rooted personal practice. And that is different from having a spiritual practice. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah. I think it is a problem when mindfulness, for example, becomes so common that everybody thinks they know what it means, and then people start teaching it without really having a personal practice and the history, and they're not bringing the level of intention and seriousness to it that they should in order to really honor that our kids deserve the highest and best of us. So I do see that as a problem, but it's not necessarily rooted in making sure that the practice is secular. It's more when the practice is sort of shallowly engaged with and then shared.
Nice. We're talking with Jennifer Cohen Harper, who obviously takes it very seriously. So you're not one of the cheap generic versions of unpracticed yoga. Sounds like this is a big part of your life too. This is Let's Talk About It. We're sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with the final segment.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It. If you have questions about services Imperial County Behavioral Health may offer that deal with today's show topic, please feel free to call 760-482-4000. Let's Talk About It is presented weekly on KXO AM 1230, FM 107.5, and KXORadio.com as a public service of Imperial County Behavioral Health Services.
Welcome back. You're still listening to your weekly wellness radio. Let's Talk About It. This is the last segment of the show. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. I'm your host, Maria Wyatt, and my co-host is Scott Dudley.
And we're about to do some stuff with our guest that's going to make you want to share this podcast all over the place.
Yes, especially with people who work with their parents or they work with children.
Absolutely. So we're joined by Jennifer Cohen Harper, and she's the founder and director of Little Flower Yoga. And she's a longtime yoga teacher, and she's going to take us through some activities and maybe a little talk about some of the elements of yoga. And so we're just going to kind of sit back and do whatever she says. And
good students.
And my arms are getting getting heavier.
Oh, you're right. Supposed to put them down a long time ago.
Put your arms down. Do whatever makes your body feel comfortable right now. But thank you so much, Scott and Maria. And as we talked through the first and second part of the show, we're talking a lot about how these practices impact kids, what they look like in the school. I'd love to share a little bit more detail what it is that we're actually doing with our students, with our own children, with our clients when we do these practices. The Little Flower Yoga methodology breaks down into what we call the five elements of yoga and mindfulness. And this holds true whether you're a parent, whether we're teaching in a school, whether we're working in a clinical setting. What we do with our students and clients is always five things. We do, and they're called the five elements: connect, breathe, move, focus, and relax. So we do practices, first and foremost, that help our kids connect. And when we say that, what we're talking about is essentially three things. Things that help our kids connect to themselves, better notice their own body sensations, their own emotions, their own impulses, right? Things that help develop self-awareness. And we all know that self-awareness is the very first step in the path to having the capacity for self-management. Right? So the connect element is very much about self-awareness. And then we do things that help our kids connect with others, right? Become more aware of the people around them, get a better capacity to read other people's emotional experience, consider other people's feelings. And then we also do things that help our kids connect with their environment or the world around them. And when I say connect with their environment, I don't mean in like a save the whales kind of way, although that's important too. What I mean is literally what's happening around me and how is it having an impact on me. So for example, you may have a kid, say, who's very sensitive to like a flickering fluorescent light. And that flickering fluorescent light is exceptionally distracting for that kid. And it just makes them feel awful. They have a particular sensitivity to it. Now, say that kid is in a classroom, where there's always a flickering fluorescent light. If that kid doesn't know that flickering fluorescent lights bother them, it's very easy for that kid to go to school every day, feel awful, and just think, school is not for me. When a connection to the environment, you know, we can't always change our environment, but it does give us information and awareness. So as we learn to become more aware of our environment and the environmental impacts on our own well-being and our own sensations and experiences in our body, we can tease out, right, what is me? What is the environment? Are there things in the environment that I can change? Do I need to kind of shore myself up to step into a difficult environment? Right, we can work with that. So nice. That's the first set of practices, is connect to self, each other, and the environment. And then we do breathwork practices, and our breath in many ways is our most powerful means of directing our nervous system. And our breath is like a direct plug-in to our nervous system in some ways. So we do breathwork practices with our kids that help them soothe their sympathetic nervous system and engage their parasympathetic nervous system. We do breathwork practices that help our kids bring their energy down and bring their energy up. They learn to modulate their energy, to check in and say, is the energy level that I'm at right now appropriate for the situation at hand? And then if it's not, they have tools to bring it up or bring it down. So those are the first two. We connect, we breathe, and then we move. And for us, the movement practice is an opportunity to discover what our body can do, right, feel the strength and power of our body, which always translates to feeling the strength and power in our mind and our emotions, our heart, right? And it's also a sort of laboratory or playground for mindfulness. So I mentioned in the first segment that mindfulness is paying attention to what's happening with kindness and curiosity. As we move, we generate a tremendous variety of sensations. Some of them feel good, some of them not so good. We do things that are really challenging for us. We do things that make us feel frustrated, right? But as we're moving, we're generating a wide variety of physical and emotional sensations. And then the task is to bring our inner resources, right, our body, our breath, our mindset to bear, and see if we can find some equanimity across all of those different movement practices. See if we can be kind and curious about our experience as it's happening. See if we can notice and stay present rather than trying to distract ourselves or run away from the experience, especially the more challenging ones. Hmm. Any of you who've ever been to a yoga class, you might have gone to a yoga class thinking like, I am so stressed out, I need to go to a yoga class so I can relax, right? And then you go to like your first yoga class and do all these things that don't feel at all relaxing.
Right? And the next day, you're very sore.
Yeah, and you're sore. And you're like, you know what would have been better than that? Like a nap. Or, you know, that would have been a better choice. But the thing is, yoga is not about relaxing. It's about learning to use our inner resources so we can better navigate challenges. And so that we can use our thoughtful brain instead of our protective brain in the engagement of those challenges. So it only makes sense that during a yoga practice, we create a wide variety of experiences and sensations, and then we practice being okay with them, not freaking out, right? So if you are in a yoga class and you're having a really hard time or you're doing something challenging, you've probably heard the instructor bring awareness back to what? Your breath, right? We're always, as yoga instructors, telling people to remember to breathe, come back to your breath, because your breath is a very powerful resource. You're using an inner resource to navigate a challenge. So this is the way we look at the move practices. We're often asking kids, what part of your body feels like it's getting stronger right now? What part of your body is relaxing? What part of your body is stretching? And so we're constantly looking at increasing self-awareness and embodiment and present moment capacity, the capacity to stay connected to the present moment, even when it's challenging, through the movement.
Nice.
So those are the first three. We connect, we breathe, we move, and then we practice focusing. And we always tell our kids, we don't tell our kids we're focusing. We tell our kids we're going to practice focusing. Because they need to practice. They immediately think they can't do it. Well, and it's not so much that they need to practice. It's that if they think they're not going to be good at something, they don't want to do it. And they, many, many kids have come to believe for all sorts of different reasons that they don't have the capacity to pay attention and focus. And so if we say, this is the part of the class where we pay attention and focus, they're like, yeah, bye. I'm out of here. I'm not doing this. So what we talk about is how we're strengthening our attention muscle, and that the more you're distracted, the more opportunities you have to strengthen your attention muscle. The way this works is that, you know, you can imagine it's similar to lifting a weight, for example, right? If you put a dumbbell on the table, held onto it really tight and never moved your arm, would your arm get stronger? No, it just gets like stiff and tired and uncomfortable. In order to strengthen that muscle, that bicep, you got to pick it up and put it down, pick it up and put it down. That's how your attention muscle is. In order to strengthen your attention muscle, you don't need to lock your mind in a vice grip. You need to let it wander. You need to be distracted, and you need to catch yourself being distracted and bring your mind back. Catch yourself being distracted and bring your mind back. And that every time you do that, it's like one rep of an exercise for your attention muscle. And that's the way we talk to the kids about building their focus capacity. And it works. We tell them, it doesn't matter if your mind wanders a ton, if you're always distracted. All that means is you get more opportunities to strengthen your attention muscle. And if your mind never wandered, you actually wouldn't get the opportunity to strengthen it. So that's what we do. We connect, breathe, move, focus. And then after all of that, we do relaxation practices. And the relaxed practices are really important because our kids are exhausted. I mean, I work with every age of kids, from little ones, preschool age kids, right up through college age kids. And maybe the single unifying feature is that they all seem to be very tired, both physically tired and energetically tired, because our world contains a huge amount of stimulation. And they struggle to relax without some distractions. Like, they can relax watching YouTube videos or something. But what we work to teach them in the relaxed practices is how to just be, right? How to let their body get some rest, how to let their mind get some rest without a distraction. So we always finish all of our sessions with kids with some sort of relaxation activity. And then, in addition to whatever the relaxation activity is that we're offering, and maybe it's a restorative yoga pose or a guided visualization, something like that, at the end of that, we do at least about 30 seconds and more if we can do it, a silent final relaxation where we're literally not giving them anything to do, right? No music, no visualization, no pay attention to your body or listen to my voice. We're literally working to sort of ease kids into the capacity to be alone with themselves in silence and have that be helpful instead of anxiety producing.
That's hard in groups though too.
There's
all that group energy. Sometimes it's hard to do that in groups.
To hold that space, to hold that silence.
Yeah.
It is. And, you know, if the silence isn't held, it's no big deal because we're in the business of investigating the present moment with kindness and curiosity. So no matter what happens, it can't be bad. We just are going to pay attention to it. So if we're coming into a silent practice towards the end of a session and the kids start giggling, for example, which is not unusual, it just gives us the opportunity to say, hey, what is it about being quiet that makes us feel like we want to laugh? Right? Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Right? What is that all about? Right? And then we get the chance to explore it. And then once we've explored it a little, we might say, okay, do we want to try it again? Right? And it's not wrong or bad, and they're not losing the experience. They're not diminishing the experience because they've laughed. They're just learning a new way to investigate what's real. And that's the beauty of mindfulness. It doesn't ask anybody to be something that they're not or put themselves into a box. Like, it doesn't, nobody's ever really wrong. We're always just noticing where we're at and coming back around to kindness and curiosity. And it's very powerful to work with children in a way that honors them as human beings and doesn't say, you did this well, you did this poorly, you know, you got the A, you got the D. You know, there's no like sorting into you're good at mindfulness or you're bad at mindfulness. It's just a ridiculous concept. You know, it's really a practice that allows children to feel powerful and engaged because there's always something more to explore and there's never a way to do it wrong. And they're not in competition with each other. So they feel more safe to do this kind of thing in community because they're not being judged and sorted.
Fantastically stated. Jennifer, I've got a long, enormous, actually both of our listeners have their hands up in the air. They want to know more about it. We're almost at the end of the show. If people want to know more about Little Flowers, they want to start doing some of the practices, they want to learn more from your work, where do they go?
The best place to go is our website. It's www.littlefloweryoga.com. There's a lot of resources on there. We have books, card decks, workbooks, all sorts of things that you can access. People are also free to reach out to me as well. My email address is jennifer@littlefloweryoga.com, and I'm happy to hear from listeners. That would be for sure the place to start. And then there are a lot of additional resources out there depending on the population you're working with and what your goals are. And I'm more than happy to share that information with listeners on a case-by-case basis. So if you're particularly interested in, you know, yoga for kids who've experienced trauma or have a particular type of special need, if I can help direct you towards a resource or a teacher with more specialization, I always will.
Fantastic. We really appreciate coming aboard today. And I think we're enjoying some of the things that we're doing with our groups of kids in our programs.
Yes, our kids are benefiting but from a lot of the mindfulness that we are implementing in our programs. It's been very beneficial. It's really, they can actually benefit more from the program using these new activities that we're using, a lot of the mindfulness that we're doing.
And when this is
I was just going to say, I'm always really excited to hear success stories. So if you're ever motivated to share, please let me know.
Absolutely. And we're going to say that we knew you when your stuff's in every single school across America because it's so effective in terms of.
And actually, we're going to be doing locally here in our county, we're going to do, Scott is in charge of doing a upcoming conference, mental health conference for Mental Health World Day.
World Mental Health Day.
Yes. World Mental Health Day. And the program we're doing, we're going to show up on mindfulness in a program. So one of the workshops will be on mindfulness. So
wonderful. And it's very easy to find mindfulness and yoga now in continuing education for both educators and clinicians.
Yes.
So anybody out there who works in the mental health field, especially if you need continuing ed, and this is interesting to you, you know, you'll be able to find on our website all of the different places around the country where we're offering continuing education workshops, and even beyond what I and colleagues offer through Little Flower Yoga. I mean, mindfulness is, you know, charging into the mental health world in a big way and into the education world as well. So, you know, meet your requirements through something that's really new and different and will serve you throughout your career, no matter what age of kids you're working with, no matter what kind of environment you're working in.
Much appreciated. This is Let's Talk About It. We're sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. Thank you for joining us this week and every week for your wellness radio. And keep listening. Thanks.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Sunday morning at 7 a.m. on KXO AM 1230 and each Sunday evening at 7 p.m. on FM 107.5. This weekly broadcast is produced by the Public Affairs Department of KXO Radio. This program features weekly community mental health issues on your radio. Let's Talk About It is produced for and presented as a public service by Imperial County Behavioral Health Service, Leticia Plancarte-Garcia, Director. Our co-hosts for today's program were Patricia Aravalo-Caro and Alfonso Ruiz. Thank you for listening.